Sunday, December the 10th, was a romantic, offbeat day. I woke a little before 9, asked for all the papers and a big pot of coffee, and leisurely read and read and read, reliving every moment of the wedding day. And then I went to the little cupboard in my office sitting room, and from the green metal box took out the packet of letters tied with a red ribbon. Lyndon's letters to me, beginning in early September of 34, and on up to about November the 14th, 3 days before our wedding. And there were a few on up into 1939. In roughly chronological order, I began to read them until I felt immersed in those fall days when I'd been doing over the brick house, all of my days and half of my mind, and with the other half trying to decide whether to marry Lyndon. While we wrote and he telephoned and we headed toward marriage, it was a strangely sweet experience, and the young Lyndon and the young Ladybird were quite real and very close. I did not get up until 3 o'clock. Then I dressed to go to Diana's party. Tony and Matiana came, and we went downstairs to Willie Day to see the wedding gifts. Tony had brought for Linda Bird a silver bowl with a grape pattern around the border, a nice size for salads, for ice cream. It had belonged to Mother and had been at the brick house in my childhood. Fortunately for us all, he had taken a few of the things away in those days, some silver, some books. Farlin had arranged the wedding presents on shelves, silver here, the china there, paintings stacked against the wall, and it was a fascinating display. The part I took great pleasure in showing Tony were all the handmade articles from the general public. Handkerchiefs with borders of tatting or crochet are wildly embroidered, blue garters galore, potholders from little girls. It was nearly 5 before we left, and I had meant to be at Diana's party at the stroke of 4. It was going full blast, and all the kinfolks were there, and a group of Washingtonians as well, the Ramsey Clarks, the Joe Fowlers, the Leonard Marxes, and Bill Whites. I made a beeline to Elaine, got a drink, sat down on a couch, and we talked and talked and talked about the Hall place, Edwina, Gus, Bernice, Lucio Thomas. Elaine and I never come to the end of something we want to say to each other. Then I went on to Roxanne. Yes, she enjoyed her job, relatively, but was looking around for something else. She did not feel close to many Swiss, although she thought there was no anti-American sentiment among the ordinary people of Switzerland or France. She had found someone she was interested in fact, she was considering marrying in the spring. She looked smart and attractive. She has made a success of her life. Then I located Aunt Ellen and had another good visit, with the Griffin Tatums on the fringes. And just as I was going on to find the Bobbitts, alas, I saw them making their departure at the door. It was one of the most relaxed and satisfying parties I've been to in a long time, partly because I was still floating in that sensation of obligation finished, job accomplished. I had told the White House there would be no one for supper, so I heartily enjoyed Diana's refreshments, went home a little past 7, and walked slowly through the first floor of the White House. Already the wedding is confined to history. The 16-foot spruce tree, beautifully shaped, went up today. Dan Argie will be decorating it all day tomorrow. And the creche was beginning to be put in place. Chief Dawson was waiting for me upstairs, and I had a long and delightful massage and turned out the light at 10. But there was a strange addenda to this peculiarly tender day. I came wide awake about 4 o'clock in the morning. I decided I was hungry. I went to the icebox and found some sandwiches and a big bowl of Waldorf salad left over from our family dinner after the wedding, and some cookies and a glass of milk. These I took back to bed and got out the other packet of letters, those that I had written to Lyndon. I do not remember how they came into my possession. I suppose after we married, he said, "I've saved these, you keep them," or something like that. But there they were, in the metal box, tied with a blue ribbon. I read them all, every one. Ate my strange middle-of-the-night meal, felt the sense of the lonely house around me. Robs and Phyllis had left in the middle of Sunday, and felt that I was slipping back in time, the fall of 1934. I remembered everything about the brick house and what I had been doing, refinishing furniture, recovering it, working with an architect, Mr. Somdahl, in Shreveport, to plan refinishing floors, painting, planning for the planting of trees and shrubs later in the fall. I've never lived in any house as long as I lived in the brick house, 21 years, and it was easy to feel that I was back there. My few outside activities, nesting with Doris, going to the little theater in Shreveport, a trip to Dallas to a football game to see Jean or Emily, and the excitement of Lyndon mounting with every letter. I closed the box, all finished, about 6, and drifted off to a half sleep, ending one of the strangest, most off-key, but most satisfying days I've lived here in the White House.